Well, thank you very much. It's really nice to see everybody and see a lot of old friends, and really nice to be here. What I'll talk about really, what I want you to think about are two new topics and two new ways of thinking about the question of growing plants in controlled, closed environments. And we'll talk about a couple ideas. Both previous speakers talked about the energy problem. It costs a lot to do this in terms of energy input. And so we're approaching the question of how do you cut the energy costs from two different ways. And I'll show you what those are. We hear a lot about the plant factory, and Dr. Kozai's book is an excellent primer to what this is. And we know that they're discussing that plant factories and this idea of indoor agriculture is supposed to give consumers better choices. It's supposed to allow us to repurpose urban space. It provides fewer food miles and also post-harvest quality, and maybe even can tap an unexploited urban labor force that can participate in growing food close to home. The problem is the tremendous startup costs to do this. And then on top of that, the electricity costs that Dr. Kozai reminds us in his book are 25 to 30% of the operational costs. So the question is, how do we cut the energy cost? How do we make a green process more green? How do we make something that sequesters carbon more carbon beneficial than to add food miles onto it and require energy to run it? So here's where we go. How do we do it? How do we do this more efficiently? And the way that we've approached this is in two ways. We can monkey with the genetics, and we can attempt to adjust the environment that those genetics operate within. And our idea is to really enhance the G by E interaction. So we don't want to just invent the glass slipper, we want to invent the foot that goes in it. And that's the analogy that we're thinking about. How do we make a perfect environment for a perfect set of genetics? And that's how we're thinking about this. It works because plants see light based upon a series of sensors that interact with their light environment. And they do this with a much broader range than the human eye. Plants can have specific receptors from way out in the UV to way past the red portion of the spectrum. And why this is important is because each one of these receptors connects to discrete downstream processes. So you can almost think of it as a switch that we can push on one of these receptors with a certain quality of light to invoke some sort of downstream response. And it gives us some sort of sense of control, that if we can control different parts of the spectrum during different parts of plant development, during different times of the day, controlling the different aspects of light, which are quality, quantity, and photoperiod, we can manipulate the plant. Not just growing a plant, but telling the plant how to grow. We have a set of commands, a vocabulary of light, and that's something that we've been working on for a number of years. I think that we can actually find individual types of genetics in the existing germplasm that allow us to, that are more amenable to inputs through different parts of the spectrum, and that's what we'll talk about today. So what can we control inside this controlled environment? And you can control the genetics. And can we improve them by looking at plants that have endogenous genetics in our existing varieties that just perform better in these light environments? And can we use them as a basis of selective breeding? And that's what we're currently working on. Down the road, we're going to be doing some gene editing as well, and I'll show you the data from that later. The other big question is, what can we control in the environment? And I'll show you some compelling data that show that we can provide seconds-long pulses to cut the energy costs, and I'll show you how that works. The first problem is the genetic problem. When you try to use something to do a job that's not bred for that environment, it doesn't work so well. And what we're thinking about is, in these controlled environments, why are we growing plants that are bred for the open field to grow plants under narrow spectrum conditions inside a box? You know, it's as two different environments as you can get. And no wonder it doesn't work as well as we think it should. So our goal is to try to improve that germplasm. And The basic idea is a good one, that when plant breeders set out to breed plants, they have an ever-fluctuating environment, plants for the field. And the top part of this graph shows there's always a range where you have to be acceptable. Maybe it's not the best, maybe it's okay, but it's always good. And that's what plant breeders are trying to do. And if you can hit that target in your career, very successful. In the controlled environment, where the environment is static or we can control it, we can find genetics that fit that environment. Again, the glass slipper for that foot. We can come up with that. And there's a lot of advantages to thinking about this, that in the field you're thinking about yield and disease resistance, post-harvest quality, all these types of factors. Whereas in the controlled environment, we can start thinking about other types of control. We can have rapid growth or ease of harvest, high crop value, and all of these other traits that we don't have to worry about because we can control the environmental input. So how do we do this? We know from years of study of photomorphogenesis that this process of moving from a dark-grown genetic program to a light-grown genetic program comes with a series of very conspicuous changes in the developing seedling. So on the left, so what you're looking at are two seedlings that are 4 days old. These are Arabidopsis seedlings. That's a plant we use in the lab sometimes. The one on the left is grown in complete darkness. The one on the right is grown in light. And the only difference between them is that light environment. These are the same genetics getting yanked in different directions because of the light signals that are changing gene expression. And you can see some of the major conspicuous changes. Cotyledon expansion and suppression of growth of that hypocotyl or that young stem. So, if we wanted to find plants that were happier to grow in an artificial light environment, why can't we screen the entire set of varieties of lettuce, which thousands of them, but we can screen a large number of them for those that have the genetics that are predisposed to be hypersensitive to light. And we can do that simply by looking at this change of those that are hypersensitive because they have shorter stems under a given set of light conditions. And we identify some varieties that maybe have hypersensitivity to blue, some that might have hypersensitivity to red or far red, and then combine those genetics through traditional breeding into new elite varieties that will have a higher sensitivity to light early in development. And it works. At least the beginning. We've looked under a number of different conditions from complete spectra to low blue to red and blue and red and far red. And this just gives you an idea of the variety that we see. This is a lettuce, and this is lettuce seedlings, the variation we see. And you can see huge differences between different varieties for cotyledon expansion and hypocotyl growth inhibition. And what this tells us is that there's this untapped hypersensitivity or sensitivity to the spectrum that we see manifesting in seedlings that maybe translates to the mature organism. And we see, I'll tell you now that it does to some degree. And so now what we're doing is identifying and characterizing all of these different seedling varieties for hypersensitivity to different parts of the spectrum and characterizing each one for those that are hypersensitive to blue, those that are hypersensitive to red or far red light. And our goal is to combine those genetics into common genetic backgrounds that give us an enhanced sensitivity and perhaps can grow better in low light environments. And that's what we're working on right now. So that's really, we're curious about how these translate to mature plants, and we see that they do. If you grow better as a seedling in a limited light environment, you also do that very well as an adult. How low can we go? And we're doing experiments right now where we're doing fluence rate response experiments, meaning growing plants under limited spectra under very low amounts of light and low amounts of energy and showing that we can still produce something that's a near saleable product. And then genetically pyramiding these into new varieties with the help of a lettuce breeder, Herman Sandoya. And so we're doing that work right now. So that's what we do in terms of fixing the genetics for a controlled environment. But how do we maybe radically modify the light environment itself? And what we're doing here is pretty cool. So what we showed was that if you could start to break the day into smaller bits, rather than a 12-hour photo period, 12 hours on, 12 hours off, what if you broke it down into 4 hours on, 4 hours off, and did it 6 times a day? What if you broke it into 1 hour and 1 hour on and off, 12 times on and off every day? What would happen? And what would happen is you got out down into minutes and seconds. And what we show is that plants don't like that. They don't like when you mess with their photo period. But when you get into the very low amounts of photo period, maybe 5 minutes on and off, plants don't seem to mind. And what you're looking at here are seedlings under, these are kale and turnip seedlings under far red pulses. of 12 hours on and off versus to the right, 5 minutes, 5 seconds on and off. And what you see is that it really bothers them to be at these intermediate times, like, you know, 30 minutes on and off, 1 minute on and off, a couple hours on and off. They don't do very well, and I have some thoughts on that for another time. But the basic idea is, and so on the left, it's anthocyanin accumulation, which is light regulated, and on the right is hypocotyl elongation, which is light elongated. So more light activation is a shorter hypocotyl. So what you're looking at is that when we get down into these seconds-long pulses, plants don't care so much that you're manipulating the duration of their photoperiod. Then a graduate student in my, or undergraduate student in my lab at the time, Paul Kasuma, who's a really sharp guy, he works with Bruce Bugbee now at Utah State. Paul, as we were getting ready to submit the work, is doing a good literature search and finds out that this wasn't such an original idea, that in 1931 Garner and Allard did it too. We felt pretty cool, but very humbled that they found the same thing we did 88 years before. And the other thought that you should be thinking is, well, Folta, not only did you not have an original idea, you're still using the same amount of light, because 5 seconds on and off is still half the day, and 12 hours on and off is still half the day. So you didn't fix anything with respect to energy. But what if we made it 6 seconds dark? 5 seconds on, 10 seconds dark. 5 seconds on, 20 seconds dark. And that's where the magic happens. We could start to decrease the DLI by extending that dark period after you give that light treatment. And what you find is that plants still maintain that dark activation after the lights go out. The data for this, these are from turnip and kale again, and the ones I want you to focus are at the right side of the graph, where what you're showing is 5 seconds on, 5 seconds off, so where it's this blue, red, far red. Again, hypocotyl elongation. 5 seconds on, 5 seconds off, and you can leave it off for 10 seconds, 20 seconds, and you still get a very similar response. So here you're able to cut back on the number of photons to create this end phenotype significantly. And I'll show you some better pictures of that in a second. What's really exciting about that is that we know from Arabidopsis again which photosensory systems are involved in this response. And that helps a lot to understand the genetics. This was a story in The Conversation just today. So if you were interested in more, this is there. It works in mature plants, and this is a lettuce variety that when we do 5 seconds on, 5 seconds off, or 5 seconds on, 10 seconds off, they're virtually the same, and maybe even a little bit bigger inside that lights-off condition. But when you get out to 20 seconds off, you start seeing it look, of course, losing the pigmentation, and you're getting a little more leaf expansion. So is there value for growers by shutting those lights off a little bit more, saving 60% of the energy and getting a completely different product? And this is the excitement of being able to use these pulse treatments. It comes out very differently than if you were to leave that DLI on. I didn't show those data for the same amount. The plants are extremely sick. By giving them a little bit of light here and there, they actually do very well, even with these extended dark periods. The reason this is exciting, I should show this, that what if you could take one set of genetics and produce 5 different products just by providing different pulses or different light conditions? And this is what I think is really an unexploited and exciting part of being able to grow plants inside a box. The last thing I'll talk about is we've actually started to identify, since we used Arabidopsis, we know the light sensory systems that push this response forward, but we've also figured out what makes the push back. So we understand what limits the light response. And this preliminary data, so I didn't want to get too much into talking about what they are, but if you look at what this is here, this is those same light conditions I showed earlier, where we're getting extremely strong suppression of hypocotyl elongation that's persisting to 40 seconds, 80 seconds, 160 seconds. And I should have put the other one up there for contrast, but the basic idea is that now you're putting in the same amount of photons and it's not reverting in this mutant background. And we're working on that now. We're going to be mutagenizing everything we can get our hands on, from lettuce to basil to everything, because we can put, presumably, if this is investing those photons more wisely, we can get an equivalent crop with much, much less energy investment. So to conclude, the energy gains, I think, are going to come from varieties selected specifically for low light environments. And I think we can use these conditions to manipulate the DLI, but spread it out over a different timing. That's really counterintuitive to what we know about circadian clocks and circadian biology, but it does work. And you can get multiple phenotypes from one genotype using fewer photons. So you're investing less light and you're getting a very nice product. And then we're also looking to edit the input limiters. So we're going to eliminate the things that eliminate, that oppose light input in the plants, which I think we have a genetic handle on those now from studies in Arabidopsis. Those are the folks who did the work, and thank you.